Dish Here is WBGO, and that there is the opening track on a brand new recording called Sonic Creed. In the leader, our guest here this morning at WBGO, Stefan Harris. Good morning, sir.
It's good to see you, Gary. How are you today?
I'm great, man. I got to tell you how much we love this new recording.
Oh, I appreciate it. I want to tell you, I've been in the studio for a couple minutes now. It's absolutely fascinating to watch you work. It's incredibly inventive. The timing, the artistry of it all, it's incredible.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that, especially coming from somebody like you. Sonic Creed, that there. You might think, hey, I know that song. Yeah, that's a classic jazz piece. Yeah, Bobby Timmons, Words, Oscar Brown Jr., yeah, good stuff. But to go back and reinvent something and give it a new set of clothes and push it forward is not only to show the artistry of your working band, but it's to make people aware of who came before people like Art Blakey and his... who was never really an educator, but yet everybody that performed as a jazz messenger will always say, yeah, man, I went to University of Art Blakey.
That's right. You know, it's interesting. That's exactly why I picked that song to start the album. Now that I'm spending a lot of my time dedicated to the field of education, I was on a panel last year and I heard someone use the term the forefathers of jazz education, and people like Art Blakey weren't mentioned.
Really?
And for me, I'm thinking, well, people like Art Blakey are the icons who created opportunities, who created challenges and the cultural circumstances necessary for generations of incredible musicians to follow. So I, with every Blackout record that we do, I always start with a really classic piece of music to honor the tradition, but we do it in our own way. So I wanted to pick this piece, because it's most famous from Art Blakey, and be able to talk about him as an educator.
And then, at the same time, you put a new set of clothes on it and say, you know, that's what makes jazz modern music. You know, I always say to people, you can be listening to Louis Armstrong Hot Fives, Hot Sevens, the original recording, right? But the fact that you're hearing it on October the 24th, 2018, your response and relationship to that classic piece of music is no more modern, right, than today. How much more modern can you get?
That's right. It's important for us to always remember why our art is significant in the world. It's supposed to be a sonic manifestation of the here and now. And when we hear people like Louis Armstrong, it's important that we study our history, because it tells us something about who we are, so that we don't make the same mistakes, that we learn along the way. So in putting a record together like this, I wanted to honor my elders and my family and talk about what's happening in the world right now through the science of music. So for me, when I think about Louis Armstrong and icons like that, the real lesson is not their legacy in terms of what happened when they were with us, but the impact that their life is having in our world today. So the fact that I look back to people like Louis Armstrong, I learned the value of leading with intelligence, right? I learned the value of expressing beyond the limitations of your circumstance.
And that, my friend, is the Sonic Creed. And when spoken, it could be your Sonic Creed, no matter what your discipline is.
Absolutely.
You know, no matter what you're getting ready to go do today, it could fit right in there. We're chatting with Stefan Harris. The new Blackout recording is Sonic Creed. Indeed, that is the Sonic Creed. It's that attitudinal thing that you bring to the situation, to the music, so it not only feels good, but it also informs. And the cat's in the band with you. You've some longtime associates like Casey Benjamin and Terry and Gully.
Yes.
Some new faces and new input as well from people like James Francis. We're going to talk more about him a little bit later on. And Joshua Crumley and Mike Moreno on guitar. Just some of the people. And then some old friends like Regina Carter also stopped by.
That's
Pedrito
right.
Martinez and others. to make this. And buy-in was pretty much unanimous, wasn't it, with the intent?
Absolutely. Well, the thing is, when creating a project like this, you actually don't have to try too hard. What you have to do is you have to bring everybody together, create a basic framework, and then get out the way. Allow people to express their individual lives and what's on their hearts and minds. And so all of us on this record, we are family. We've known each other for decades at this point. So when we came together, we had a basic format, and I just let it unfold the way that it needed to unfold in the moment.
And as an educator, I would imagine one of the hardest things for you is to take those life lessons that you've had the luxury to be around and be exposed to and pass them along to the generation that's coming up. One life lesson that was probably more than just one lesson was the association with somebody like Wayne Shorter.
Oh, my goodness. Wayne Shorter is just one of the most brilliant human beings in the history of our species. I love Wayne so much, primarily because of his courage. I've seen him on stage so many times, and you sometimes there's a little round robin where it's going from one musician to the next, and everyone's taking their solo, and it's sounding really great. And when it gets to Wayne, you have no idea what is going to come out that man's instrument.
There was a story about an arrangement that you had done for the SF Jazz Collective, I believe, that Wayne was part of?
Yeah, we did his arrangement of Go, which we've included on this current record. So again, on the record Sonic Creed, these are all tributes to people that I've actually had real life interactions with, and they've had a major impact on my development as a musician and as a man.
We'll talk more with Stephon Harris. Let's enjoy Wayne Shorter's Go. Once again, from the new recording called Sonic Creed, that's Wayne Shorter's composition, it's Go. And we go to Stephon Harris and talk about when you did that arrangement for Wayne and you were handing out the sheet music, and Wayne goes,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. This was for a show for the Thelonious Monk Institute, and someone asked me to do an arrangement the night before. And so I'm passing out music, and Herbie's on the gig, and I go over to Wayne and I pass a chart to him, and he looks at me and he says, "Oh, I haven't read music in 17 years." And that was like a life-changing moment for me to understand that this genius is experiencing music in its most pure form. It has nothing to do with eyesight. It's all about vibrations and understanding sound, and he completely lives in that world. And ever since then, I've been completely dedicating myself to developing my ear on a deeper level and creating tools like my app Harmony Cloud to help other people develop their ears and their sense of empathy in art.
That's a heavy thing, man. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about your app. Now, when I think of computers and when I think of software and software design, for the most part, and I'm a real novice at this, but attitudinally, I think of things finite. You tell it what to do, and it does it. It doesn't go, I'll get around to it, right? Siri, dial this number. Right away, sir. You know, but with Harmony Cloud, you have found a way, you and your partner have found a way to introduce improvisation. Talk about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting when we think about the idea of intuition, and sometimes I think human beings, we're under the illusion that our capabilities are endless, right? And we think about software being finite. I think even our own minds seem to have a limitation, but it's so far ahead of where we are right now. So when I look at software, I see it very similar to the way that our minds work. We just haven't caught up to our own potential yet, and thank goodness for that. So I wanted to create a tool that would help challenge people. As an educator, I feel it's my responsibility to essentially give my students the tools that they need to express themselves. And then I need to put them in really uncomfortable situations and give them the opportunity to fail and use those tools to fight their way out of it. That's going to put them in a position to move out here in the world and deal with all of the unpredictability that we're going to face. It's inevitable. It's a part of our evolution as a species.
And if you were lucky enough to perform in arenas like you did, you know, that's what somebody like Ron Carter would do on the stage.
That's right.
You know, is he would walk a young pianist right out of town.
Right.
And no. then lay back and you find your way back.
My first gig with Buster Williams, it was one of these situations where a lot of people were recommending me to work with him, and he hadn't heard me. But based on Steve Turay's recommendation, he hired me. And I'm still in college at the time. I had been playing jazz 2 or 3 years. I was a classical musician first. So I get on the bandstand, and he calls a rhythm change in B-flat. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I've been studying that in class. So, of course, it's Buster Williams, Lenny White, Jerry Allen, incredibly creative human beings. Count off the tune, Buster didn't play a single B-flat the whole time. And I was so incredibly lost. And it was perfect. I looked back at Buster, and he gave me that perfect glance of, you better swim right now, young man. And I'll never forget that day, because I realized our most innate reaction to the unknown and that type of fear is actually to listen and observe. So it put me in a position to be more connected with the other people around me when I didn't understand what was happening.
And Harmony Cloud would present a situation quarterly, I guess, right? And then your options to go in whatever direction stem from that.
Right, so imagine if I get on the bandstand tonight, I'm playing at the Blue Note with Robert Glasper. It's incredibly unpredictable. What's on that piece of paper, that's not going to happen. We all know that. It's just like a begin of jumping off point. So I don't really know what's going to happen. So I have to have the ability to hear whatever direction he's going. But how do you practice that? So what I would do with my students, I would sit at the piano and I'd say, turn around and see if you can figure out what I'm doing. And they kept asking me, well, how do I work on that? So I created an algorithm that allows software to actually improvise chord progressions that are unpredictable. So you can start with 3 chords and say, all right, I can't tell the difference between these 3. And as you get better, you add a 4th chord, a 5th chord. And right now, the update that's coming in January, we have up to 500 chords.
Wow.
And I'll tell you the test that the standard that I had for myself, I would record myself at the keyboard and I would pick 15 chords or so, and I would record myself for like 10 minutes. And then I would put those same 15 chords in the app. And if I couldn't tell the difference between my improvisation and the app, then it was ready. And that's why it took so many years, because I've held it to that standard. And it's finally doing it. It's an amazing thing. And I couldn't be more excited to get this tool out here, because I know it's going to unlock people's potential to connect with one another.
See, and most of the people listening right now are not musicians, but dig this. What he's talking about here is applicable to any situation. And if you don't believe me, Google TED Talks. Most of you know what TED Talks are. You know, unusual new ways to approach an infinite, almost, amount of subject matter. And you will find Stefan Harris and some of his friends, including Jamiah Williams and Christian Sands and
Bernice Travis,
in front of not music students, but business finance people, which Stefan said, you know, being a jazz musician, we have very little in common, but yet we have a lot in common, because attitudinally, a mistake is never that. It's an opportunity.
That's right. I mean, again, when we hearken back to trying to understand what is our value in society, because musicians have a responsibility to contribute as much as the chef, as much as the president, or anyone in society. And I look back at the origins of this art form, and I realize that we've basically created the blueprint for how to cope with challenges associated with diversity and tolerance and inclusion. This is an art form that is most fundamentally about empathy. The first thing, the most important tool that you need is your ability to first understand the circumstance that you want to contribute to. So musicians, and it may seem counterintuitive to most people, we spend the majority of our time working on our ability to understand others, not necessarily on our ability to play our instruments. The instruments are just a bunch of metal and wood. They're just tools. The real gift that our ancestors have left us is a blueprint to help understand others and how to amplify the voices of others around us so that in the long run, we ultimately have a greater, more accurate picture of who we really are as a species.
And sometimes a picture greater than what your palate had in mind in the first place. I'm thinking of the Bobby Hutcherson piece Now, and talk about what Gene Baylor did.
Oh my goodness.
In that piece. Now this is exactly what you're talking about, right?
Absolutely. So first of all, Bobby Hutcherson was absolutely a genius. I'm so lucky to have had the opportunity to spend a fair amount of time with him, just following him around. He would invite me in the studio. He and his wife were so incredibly kind and generous to me. So I'm forever grateful.
I saw you at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola maybe a couple of years back. Within the last couple of years, and you referenced your good friend Bobby Hutcherson, and I remember the thing that you said from the stage that night, and you said, one of the most invaluable lessons I ever learned is when he looked at me and said, never forget that it's about family first.
That's right. That's right. It's so funny. This music is... it's just organized vibrations. It's not the most important element. The music itself is a manifestation of something so much deeper that's important for all of us to understand moving forward during our time on the planet. So I wanted to honor Bobby by recording his incredible piece Now. But in honoring our ancestors, I think it's really important that we do it in a way that they would be proud of. And I think the concept of simply imitating sounds from the past is such a contradiction to the purpose of our art form. And I know that the people who've mentored me would not feel comfortable with me doing that. So I'm bringing those lessons forward and applying it to everything that I do in my life. So in putting this piece together, I basically took the framework. It's a phenomenal melody. It's almost a beautiful chant that's repeated. And then I decided to add some string textures. I brought in a good friend of mine, Omar Thomas, to help with some of the arrangements. And then we brought in Gene Baylor. So there's an incredible lyric, and it's a very fluid melody, very open. So when we got to the hook in the studio, Gene says, hey, do you mind if I try something? And again, I'm a very open manager, so to speak, right? So I said, absolutely, everybody leave the studio. So it's just Gene, the engineer, myself, and Tarion Gully, who was co-producing with me. Gene went upstairs in the booth, and within 20 minutes or so, she came up with that entire vocal arrangement on the spot. She just tried line after line. She ended up layering about 16 background voices and then doing a couple of passes. And it was just really music being created in the moment based on the inspiration of what was available to us in art.
And the empathy between the musicians making the music.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. None of us knew that this piece was going to come out the way that it did, but we're all incredibly grateful that we've been dedicated enough to master our crafts and continue to work on our crafts and then get out the way and do our jobs to express the reality that we see in the world.
We're with Stefan Harris. Let's hear it now. That's exactly what it is. Bobby's right. This is about family.
Absolutely. Always. It's one of the greatest inspirations for all of us. And it's the way that we ensure our legacy and make sure that we contribute to the evolution of our species.
And when everybody feels like that toward the common good or the common goal, then you have someone like Gene Baylor in the spur of the moment going, you mind if I try something? Right? So it sounds like a harmless kind of right request. Well, and then 16, not two or three, 16 vocal tracks later.
Yeah.
You get this.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I mean, in the moment.
It reminds me of what I think are the core cultural tenets of our art form. I think our success is always predicated upon love, trust, and respect. And when you have those elements present, when you put a team together, you can get out of the way. You can allow people to take a leap, and sometimes it's going to work and sometimes it won't. But you understand that even when it doesn't work, it inspires something else in someone else, right? So it's every possibility in the moment, given a certain time frame, is absolutely welcomed in this art form. And again, that's why I think it is a beautiful blueprint for the challenges that we face as a young democracy.
Oh boy, do we ever need the power of the Sonic Creed? I'm telling you. Well, when you look around, and you don't have to, I've said this two or three times this hour, you don't have to be a musician to feel this, because it's a universal kind of thing that's applicable. And we're not going to Woodstock and a bunch of hippies on a commune here. I mean, this works, and you can feel it. And what brings the glue and the concentric circles of all these fine musicians together to make and express a sonic creed is the same thing that brings you to the music as a fan. Same thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I know for me, when I hear my own records, ironically, I don't feel ownership of them, because Tarion is such a significant part of the art that is being created. I don't tell Tarion anything at all.
Yeah,
we've been working together over 20 years, and there are two specific occasions that I can remember in the studio where I said, "Hey, man, can you try this?" And both times I was wrong. He tried it. It felt okay. And then he came up with something on his own that was so much greater than what I could imagine for him. So when I hear my own albums, I hear Casey Benjamin's voice and I hear Gene Baylor. And I'm just the person who's bringing us together to create the opportunity for everyone to tell their story. But I can't take ownership of all of it.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying here. But that ownership might feel like that. You know, how many times, and you came from a classical background, you know, how many times did you ever hear a fan of classical music go, "Haydn, that's my music," as opposed to, "Ellington, that's my music."
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Basie, that's my music. Right? Milt Jackson, that's my music. Bobby Hutt, that's my music.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really hope that in all the projects that I've been doing over the past decade or two, oh my goodness, did I just say that out loud? I mean, I hope that people see a bit of themselves in the music that we're creating. Right? I want to express what's on my heart, and I know that I'm no different than the other members of my community. And the pain that I'm feeling in my heart, I know that there are others who are feeling that pain, and it's my job to put it out there in organized sound, because it creates a sense of healing for all of us. Part of the reason that I choose to make a record, I only make a record when I feel I have to.
It's been 8-9 years since the last one, right?
Yeah, I've been so incredibly busy trying to grow, trying to understand what I'm supposed to do with my time on the planet, which I really can tell you it's all about amplifying the value of empathy in the world. And I realize that there are many platforms to do that. Music is just one of them. But at this point, with the reason I needed to make this record, aside from the art that was inside of me, was taking a look at the political landscape, what we're going through, particularly in terms of the negative associations with how African Americans are being perceived. I know that I've been around true genius as an African American. I've met the most brilliant human beings on the planet being a part of this art form. And I thought it was important for me to move forward and create a piece of art that reflected our higher values as a people, so that you understand we are a beautiful people. We're intelligent. We love our families. We love one another, and we struggle just like anyone else. So I'm trying to amplify the stories of my grandparents, of my mother and father, and my community right now, so that the world understands who we are, which is why art is important. Again, because we don't know one another. You have so many marginalized communities that have no access to tell their story other than through the world of the arts.
And no desire to tie the different stories together into a sense memory that is individual in nature, but also collective as it moves forward. I mean, that's what empathy is, right? Mm-hmm. It's that commonality that exists among different people. And to the source, with our guest on WBGO, maybe his own sense memory of growing up as a kid in the backyard barbecues and the music that was right there with it, which was the impetus for this track that takes its title from his two kids, Chase and Kendall.
Yeah, that's their middle names.
Right.
Their first names are Langston and Ellison, obviously named after Langston Hughes and Ralph Ellison. No pressure. Hey, we have high standards. They need to know their ancestors. So.
This is Stefan Harris and Blackout. This is Chase and Kendall. That sense memory, isn't it?
Yeah.
Those bass lines, man, from those great tunes from the 70s. Oh, man.
Oh, the power of the bass.
You betcha. Jason Kendall, that's on the new one. It's called Sonic Creed. We're chatting with Stefan Harris this morning at WBGO. And you can read about all of these things we've chatted and so much more. Man, we just touched the surface. So much more in the cover story of the new Downbeat magazine, Stefan Harris, A Science of Empathy. Indeed, it is a science and a pleasurable one at that. And when it's like that and you walk into the attitude with an attitude that says, you know, there's no mistakes, man. There's only opportunities to go somewhere else. Take that F sharp. Run with it.
That's right. The only mistake is if I can't do something with it. It's my fault.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'll tell you, just thinking about the bass line on Chase and Kendall, it reminds me, sometimes people ask me about how I was able to get into jazz so quickly. I mean, I did a little bit in high school, but very little. I heard Charlie Parker for the first time in college. And then within 3 or 4 years, I was playing with Max Roach and these people and lots of other iconic musicians. The reason, I think, is because while I didn't start off playing jazz, I got the cultural foundations of the music from my community. My mother's a Pentecostal minister, so I grew up in the church hearing people preach. And the rhythm of the way people preach is so soulful. The passion that they deliver stories with, and then the chords that kick in behind those stories to amplify the emotion in it. I feel like I learned how to play from going to the barbershop as a kid.
Well, and when you talk about the African-American community, a community forcibly disenfranchised in terms of their cultural connections and the concentric circles that represent the race, to the extent where the only real time it came together, man, was with the music on Sunday in the church.
That's right. If we were in a situation where you were not allowed to tell the truth about who you were. You weren't allowed to express your love. You were absolutely not allowed to express your intelligence. The one time that you would have been, the one opportunity you would have had to do that would have been Sunday in church. And for me, I witnessed that growing up in the church. So I always knew that that's what music was really about. And so for me, when I create music, it's not really about my ideas per se. I've accepted that it's my job to be a sonic griot. I take a look around at my life, at my community, at my experiences, and I try to capture those experiences in organized sound. So this piece that we just heard, the impact that I hope that it has, I hope it makes people feel good. I hope it makes people want to gather with family. I hope it makes them smile. It's not about some abstract intellectual idea. That's not my job. My job is to paint a picture of the reality that we see today, so that 500 years from now, future generations will understand something about who they are based on how we documented our journey on the planet.
Yes, with a nod to great people like Bobby Hutcherson, Wayne Shorter. There's also Horace Silver. And also, if you know the great pianist and former jazz messenger himself, Donald Brown, his son is a very fine songwriter too, and kind of somebody that was there at a very young age, mm-hmm. and you mentored in a way.
Well, Keith Brown is a phenomenal musician, yeah. and we recorded one of his pieces called The Song of Samson, and that's another part of the way that we put records together. It's another reflection of our values. Every one of the Blackout records that I've done, I've always recorded someone's piece of music who's not in the band, who's alive right now, to continue to find other ways to tell the story in a way that's holistic and complete.
And if you're an Abby Lincoln fan, good God Almighty, there's a version of Throw It Away that you'll do anything but, man. You'll bring it close to the heart, and it's one of those moments where this was kind of working, but it wasn't working the way that everybody wanted it to work. So they turned all the lights off.
Yeah,
and just thought, well, let's just see what happens here.
That's right. Yeah, the music is so powerful, you can't control it. All that you can do is be a humble child, be obedient to the music, and get out the way. So we were trying an arrangement, and it was at the end of the day, I think we were tired, and we were thinking, oh, let's come back tomorrow and do it. And then Tarion, our drummer, said, you know what, just turn off the lights, complete darkness, let's see what happens. So I remember saying, well, who's going to start? And everybody said, well, I don't know. And the interesting thing about how it's unfolded was that James Francis had been playing piano on the previous track, and he had this keyboard there that he hadn't used. And so all the lights go out, and all of a sudden we hear like this spaceship or some crazy sound, and we had no idea what was going to happen. He wasn't necessarily playing the chord progression to the tune. So this is this moment where you see the value of empathy. I had to use my ear and to improvise something in the moment to connect with what James was doing. And then we eventually found our way into the composition, but the arrangement is completely improvised. And I'll tell you, my favorite moment of this rendition of the song is the last note. And the reason I say that is because we stop on a dime. It's completely dark, there's no conductor, there's no music in front of us, but we're so connected as a community of brothers that we intuitively understood that this is the moment to let it go, and we stopped all together.
Listen for it. So, one of you guys had a flashlight.
That's pretty good.
Throw It Away in the dark. And I really like Casey's work. Oh, just go, whew.
What a gift.
Just kind of flowed there. There's all kinds of great people on this new record. We're chatting with Stefan Harris, and the new record with Blackout is called Sonic Creed. And with all respect to Motema, they do wonderful recordings. There ain't nothing like the live experience.
Yeah.
Put it in your futures file. Coming in January.
That's right. On January 4th, we'll be at the Jazz Standard. Whew. Come on out and hang out. It's definitely a whole other experience live for all of us.
And you're getting ready to do a tribute to Quincy Jones, too, coming up.
That's right. So I'm the associate dean and director of the jazz department at Manhattan School of Music, so I get to have some say in the programming. And once I took over that position, I knew it was absolutely essential that we honor someone as iconic as Quincy Jones. Sometimes in the world of jazz, we forget just how much of a genius Quincy Jones is. And the thing I love about his life is how courageous he's been. He's never been afraid to walk through that door. It doesn't matter what's on the other side. He walked and took all of the tools with him to find his space and continue to create. I think that's just a phenomenal lesson for our students.
Check out the Netflix documentary that's been up for about a month or so.
Yeah, I've seen it four times already.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, so we're going to do a concert with our big band at Harlem Stage and also at Dizzy's. It's in about 2 weeks. I can't recall the date offhand. And the great John Beasley's going to come in and direct the ensemble. So it'll be a fun concert celebrating the music of Quincy Jones.
We're going to go out this morning with the music dear to your heart, once again from Sonic Creed, but inspired by your life partner.
That's right. My wife, Shanae, has been my best friend for 26 years now. And we've been married for 18 years. And I'm just the luckiest man on the planet. And what greater inspiration in art than love? Everyone around this planet knows love. And after one of our later anniversaries, I decided to write this piece of music to celebrate our love and talk about the work that it takes to keep it alive, right? There are challenges that come, but it's always fun and exciting to continue to open new doors, and she's just been my best friend, and I'm incredibly grateful to her.
And you'll feel that, not only from the words of Stefan Harris, but also with what started as a poem and ended up as a wonderful feeling toward his life partner. Thank you, man, for coming by this morning.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate you.
Stefan Harris and Blackout, the new one, Sonic Creed. Let's take a trip to the sky.
Let's take a trip in a dream.